News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
All right, 8:07 FM Talk 106.5 on this Thursday morning. You're listening to Mobile Mornings. I'm Dalton Arwig and the one and only. I think we might use that too much, that term, on this radio station.
Yeah. Way overused.
The one, Sean Sullivan, and for Dan Brennan.
Not only because there's a shot, you know, I get stuff sent at me at Twitter, like people all... I get off because there's a Sean Sullivan that works for the Washington Post, the liberal publication there.
Mm-hmm.
There's a
Sean PR person for one group that
emails. Oh my gosh, emails. That guy, yes.
I thought you were, for the longest time, I thought you were emailing me certain things about programming. Yeah. And it turns out it's this other Sean Sullivan.
Yes.
And you had no idea what I was talking about.
And so the other Sean Sullivans on Twitter all got together. I got a note from them. We all had to disambiguate that we're not the guy with like flags across America and we're not that one. There's also like a representative out of Connecticut. There was a Maryland Terrapins quarterback back in the
80s. I've just always assumed that was you.
Yeah, I know it looked like me. I remember I played defense and I
that's right
didn't play above 12th grade.
So there's one there's one other Dalton Arwig as far as I can tell, at least in America. Now, there might be 50 in China, for all I know.
Well, but yeah, Orwig's very big.
Very popular
very
name over
big,
there.
On the outskirts of Shanghai, that's where y'all are big.
Yeah, but the other Dalton Arwig that I've found is maybe 10 years my junior. He's the only one I've been able to find with my exact name.
There can only be one Dalton.
Yeah, I'm going to have to find him and make sure I'm the only one left.
That's right.
And what are the odds of that, right? There being another Dalton Arwig? Hey, speaking of odds.
See, this is good. I see what you did. That's what we call a segue.
The gambling discussion is... It's supposed to, you know, happen today in Montgomery. Today is the second, the penultimate. I never use that word when I should, so I'll use it today. Today is the penultimate day of the general session. Only 2 days remain of the 30-day schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they've been able to space those 30 days out over the last over 100 days, I guess. Mm-hmm. And the final day will be mid-May, I think May 15th, right? And
That's right. You've explained
before why there's such a gap between when they kind of wrap things up and then finalize it on that last day, and it's because of the governor's veto powers.
Right. So this is a buffer built in. So first of all, like Dalton said, they have legislative days and we have calendar days. And within the calendar window, which is ending on the 15th, started February 1st or 2nd, I forget what it was this year, you can then apply within the calendar, you can space out the legislative days how you want.
Right.
Usually they do Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. But once you use them all up, it doesn't matter about the calendar. Mm-hmm. You have to use them up before the end of the calendar date, but if you could pack them all in the beginning and use them all up and be finished. I hadn't seen that happen, I don't think, in my lifetime that I was paying attention to.
And although we know that the people that work in government like to take breaks, they mm-hmm. like to head back home, but just because they're not in session doesn't mean they're not working during this time of year, because the committees are still allowed to meet, right?
You're spot on. Let me do this. This is about fact, not about rah-rah. You know, it would be easy to sit here and talk radio and just, you know, and yes, do I have my issues with Montgomery? Yeah, maybe I've made a career out of it, having issues with Montgomery. But truth is the most important thing, and the truth is, they are working. I can tell you, I can't say for all of them, but a whole bunch of them that I know, that even when they're not in session, even they're not on the floor of the House or the Senate, they're working. They're working before session starts, after session starts. They have all these meetings and things they have to go to. They're working on the legislation. They don't just show up and say, oh, here's a bill. You know, they have to build that bill. They have to do all these things before they bring them up. And then we get to criticize and lampoon the bills, but they are working. So that's not Democrat, that's not Republican, that's just how it works. So
today should be really interesting because
there's a whole bunch of stuff packed in here at the end.
Yeah, they'll start with medical marijuana. I think they were supposed to get started at around
as
8.
Every congressional day should.
So they're going to continue the debate of medical marijuana, that bill, which they discussed for 10 hours, filibustered, maybe a better word, filibustered for 10 hours on Tuesday. And that will start for today, the medical marijuana bill. And then I guess if there's time remaining after that, they'll move into the three different gambling bills that are up right now.
Should we? And I don't want to skip past what you were saying earlier. So on this schedule, what happens is they have these days this week. They take next week off, okay, because that gives them the buffer of a, I think the governor has 10 days right of refusal. In other words, 10 days, 10 days to veto a bill. So you end today. Okay, and then you don't come back next week. You come back the following week. So anything that you finished up today, if the governor was going to veto it, she has to play her cards before the sine die day. And you can come back. If you needed to do an override on a veto, you could do that. That's probably not going to happen, but that's why that's built that way.
Yeah, and both of these bills we've talked about incessantly over the last few months. I think the medical marijuana bill,
it was big when we started. It was the big thing rolling into session, and here it is on the second to last day, and it's still huge.
Yeah, and the medical marijuana bill is a big deal, but I think by far the story of today will be what happens with the gaming bill. And Jeff Poor and you discussed that this earlier this week, and me, I guess I was in on the discussion.
Yes, you were part of it.
About the House bill that's been rolled out. And Jeff was reading through that as soon as he got his hands on it and said, hey, this looks like it came straight from Governor Kay Ivey's office. And then that's actually, I guess, been confirmed since. Yeah. And yesterday, Governor Ivey released a statement saying that, you know, she wants the gaming bill to pass. She said it will allow Alabamians to be the beneficiaries. But what weighs more? What is worth more in the eyes of our legislators? What Governor Ivey wants, or commentary from Donald Trump Jr., who, you know, say what you want about him, he does make political waves just because of who his father is, and his voice carries some weight now in Republican politics.
And here in Alabama, yeah.
Yeah, and Alabama, one of the most Trumpy states in the nation.
I think we're the Trumpiest, actually, beat West Virginia.
Yeah, so Trump Jr. heard about this Alabama gaming bill, and of course there were Trump casinos, and it still are, and he commented, bad bill. If you're going to legalize gambling, actually legalize it. But giving a monopoly to a small group of casino bosses is just a special interest giveaway. This bill would stop the world's best gaming operators from opening world-class resorts and casinos in Alabama. Now, Sean, I think you, in my eyes, led the charge on basically what Trump Jr. had to say there yesterday, him jumping in now. You've been saying this for months. Do you think this will influence the discussion today on Goat Hill?
I really don't know, because I think so much of this, what they're talking about inside the House and they're watching from over in the Senate, is this allocation of proceeds from gaming. And also the limitations on who can play the game. In other words, who can run the operations. That's been my issue. And I'll say the end of the tweet from Donald Trump Jr., I mean, he and I line up pretty much like 95%. I'm not as worried because he's not an Alabamian. I'm not as worried about the world's best gaming operators. I am, in a way. What I'm interested in is competition. Okay. And yes, I'm not naive. I do know why we're not getting the competition here. But I'm making my case on the pro side. Instead of just picking on the negative, let me do something on the positive side. Why doing things the way I want to do them is better. If you have competition, there's so much made about the revenue for the state. There's more revenue to be realized by the state with competition. And there's also that free market that will make the facilities better because they will have to compete for business. Okay, I'll lay more of this out in a second.
Yeah.
Let me go.
Yeah, and I'd love to hear from you also. Text line, phone lines, 343-0106. We'll turn up your voice. Thank you, Kane. 820 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings. Dalton Orwig. Sean Sullivan in early again. You have another show coming up in just a few hours, I know.
Yeah, midday mobile. Can I interrupt for 1 second?
Please do.
So a huge object in the road, unidentified, I guess.
Is that where you're taking this?
Well, I would take a UFO, but that's what I'll save for midday mobile. But can we get some confirmation, Kane, in the traffic part, what the object is? Or could we possibly guess?
Yeah, well, there's nothing stopping us from guessing.
You want to play guess on the text line, what it might be, huge object in the road that they can't identify. Because if it was a ladder, like it often is on the interstate, yikes, when you come up on one of those, you can identify that. So what item, if it's a cardboard box, you'd identify that. If it's a refrigerator, if it's my Uncle Merle, you could identify this, but unidentified object in the roadway.
My guess, a large trunk full of Mardi Gras beads.
Okay, that's yours, large trunk full of Mardi Gras beads. Mine is going to be a collection of Hardy Boys books. I think a big pile.
With those two guesses, one of us has to be
for
right.
Sure, we're probably a lock on that.
I would say for sure a lock. Do you think the gambling bill, in some form or fashion, general session or special session, is a lock this year, or you think it's the farthest thing from that?
No, I think it's somewhere in between. I think this may make it through. I do want to say one thing, so because we had a text said, why don't they use the 10 veto days to work on another bill instead of breaking? So, because remember, they only have, like, they have the calendar window, but they have only so many legislative days to spend. Like, you know, once they're there, then that counts, and it's minus, minus, minus.
Right. Okay.
Here's why I think this passes, because I have seen from the get-go, in my years watching Montgomery, it's not that it had never happened before, but this thing has, like, so much momentum behind it. Not momentum with the people. It has the power players behind this thing. It kind of reminds me of the gas tax, where it was almost a foregone conclusion, even though they did that in a special session. It seems like if it gets derailed, it's derailed for about half a day, and it's right back up on the tracks. Bills that don't have as much behind
juice.
Them will juice, yeah, will get off the rails and stay off the rails. You talk about medical marijuana. So Nelson's brought that bill 3 years in a row, and it's finally now just getting traction. This is year one on this iteration, this iteration of the gambling bill, and it seems to deflect all arrows that come towards it. And so that's why I would think, but at the same time, right, this is why I don't think it's one or the other. I think it's in the middle, is there are so many possible poison pills in it, and not poison pills with we the people, because like I told you, I don't feel we're even part of the. They realize what the polling shows, that Alabamians will vote for the constitutional amendment. Remember, and Dalton mentioned earlier the bills, plural. So you have an enabling legislation. You have a constitutional amendment we would vote on that says, okay, you can have gambling in the state, and the follow up bills are. It's this, this, and this, and here's how you regulate it, and here's how it looks, and here's how the money is distributed. That's where you have a lot of people that are, not us, but members of the legislature, that are jockeying for positions to protect their duchy, wherever it is that already has some form of gaming there, or protect their interest for getting more money for their group. So that's where it could get messed up.
And I guess, you know, the most recent change to that portion or similar part of the bill was the daily fantasy sports thing. That happened, that was 2 years ago they legalized that, and that basically amended the gambling part of the Constitution to allow games of skill, right?
Right, games of skill, and that it's only happened after federal law changed.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm. So that was, and this is three bills. You were describing the other two parts of this, of the gambling thing, I guess. So the first would be an amendment to the state Constitution, and then what the other two things that they'll be discussing here.
Yeah, so the bills would be what it looks like. It's lottery, casino gaming, sports betting, and then there's the regulation.
Okay, yeah.
So, you know, this is one of the differences, though. It's off the top of my head, but the Senate bill had the oversight committee made up of people that were nominated from the governor got to nominate some, lieutenant governor got to nominate some, the attorney general got to nominate some. I'm going to run out of and maybe
somebody
maybe
else.
Probably Senate President Pro Tem got to, yeah. Senate President Pro Tem got to name some, and Speaker of the House got to. So you had a breakout of who gets on the Oversight Committee for Gaming, broken through different elected officials. In this House bill now that they're working, the one that Blackshear's carrying, the one that even the governor's office is admitting that they wrote a lot of this. It gives the appointment power for the entire board to the governor.
So interesting.
That's interesting. It's kind of, you know, that push and pull between the legislative and the executive branch there going on. So that's one of the big changes. And I don't know if they square that back in the Senate or not.
So you spoke with early on in the session and multiple times now. You've spoken with, several people about this, but one more notable than many others, oddsmaker Danny Sheridan, who knows casino operators
pretty
well.
He knows the stuff inside out.
Yes. He knows the entire industry. And what he told you about this, at the time it was Del Marsh's bill that you were discussing, is that he knows people personally that would pay a lot of money for the rights to have not casinos, but sports gaming rights.
Yeah, but also casinos.
But he was specifically talking about just the sports betting portion of it. And on top of that, the money that bringing in other operators of casinos, and then to have Trump Jr. jump in on this yesterday, who, of course, grew up around the casino industry, that would there be any recourse if this sails through the way it is, if Ivy signs it? 10 years down the road, if we're looking at a shoddy Theodore casino that's fallen apart and has smells like smoke, and there's no real incentive for people to go to it except for problem gamblers that just want to get out and gamble, is there any recourse? Would we be able to come back and say, listen, this was a bum deal that we signed. This isn't at all what we wanted in the casino industry in Alabama. Or is this it if we sign this
through? If it comes out of the legislative branch, it's a law that can be amended by the legislative branch. And they go, but remember, we're seeing the issues here with the entrenched players. Two of them, basically, this duopoly. We're talking about these entrenched players having so much influence over the discussion. So let it go on for, let's just open up and let's let it go on for 5, 6, 7, 8 years. You're telling me that those folks, because remember, the legislative branch can do it, but the legislative branch is already showing that it is looking more towards these constituencies and these groups that hold a sway over a lot of votes. You're going to increase that. Right, you're going to increase it. So you'll have, why would this block of members of the House or Senate that have their bread buttered by this group that's now expanded because now gaming is fully legal and it's now bigger. And I know there's a thing in there that they can't donate to the candidates and all that stuff. I was born in the morning, but it wasn't yesterday morning, you know. They will be further entrenched, and the odds, unless you put a whole new suite of people into the House and Senate that don't have those connections, you could do it, but I think it would be harder than what's going on right now. Because there'll be more, give it 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years in there. The habits will be built, the connections will be in, and it will be very, very hard to rip that out there and start over again.
And then this has been less discussed, but this doesn't exactly mean that casinos and lottery and sports gaming is on the way, even if this were today to sail through the House, sail through the Senate again, and then Ivy signs it, because it still ends up going on the ballot next year.
But people are going to vote for it because they want gaming, and they don't care.
Right.
If they're arguing now this much goes to, the rural health care, this goes to broadband, this goes to ETF, this goes to general fund, I think I talked about this with Dale Jackson before, if it went to fund Al-Qaeda, if it went to fund the Joe Biden for President re-election campaign, people vote for it.
Or even the AOC campaign.
AOC campaign. They vote because they want gaming. Yeah. That's what they know, and that is not a concern. They know that people want gaming, so they're going to tweak it now because they know that it's like a sure thing that they're going to get the yes vote on this. And I'm somebody who is – I'm good with gaming. I don't do this from any kind of anti-gaming situation. I have no problem with it. I'm against bad deals and non-free market solutions.
We'll get Rob Holbert from Lanyap, his take on the gaming bill and the new issue of Lanyap on Stance Now. We'll find out what's in it coming up. You're listening to FM Talk 106.5. FM Talk 106.5. This is Mobile Mornings, Thursday style. Dalton Orwick here, Sean Sullivan on the other side of the table.
Hey.
And on the other side of the phone line, Rob Holbert, Lanyap, lanyapmobile.com, and a new issue on stands, in hands, and online now. Rob, good morning.
Good morning. I guess you could say, Dalton, that Sean and I are triangulating you. I can't say it. You're in between us here. Hot box between us.
Triangulated.
Enough, Holbert.
I love, first off, this is kind of a game that I play, because when you go to lanyapmobile.com and there's a new issue on stands, on the front page, you could see part of the cover. And you have to click on it to see the entire cover. So a little game I play is using a portion of the cover, guessing what the cover story is about.
Could this possibly be about? And this one you look at and you think, God, these guys are really writing about something strange this week.
I had no idea, but now that I see the headline, I'm interested. USA simulation program provides personal approach to anatomical training.
And I thought it was something else.
Sean thought it was something
Sean
entirely else.
Sean was hoping it was something else. But it was, but yeah, it is. It's a very interesting deal. It's that South does, they have, you know, they, when you're teaching doctors, they have to learn, and learning, you know, it involves like touching people and learning from people. And so, and also they have some very expensive dolls for them to learn on, some, or dummies as we call them. But the, but there also are people that, who are the standardized patients, or STs as they call them. And they basically are actors who act out roles, for these doctors in training to learn on.
That's awesome.
Well, it is, but it's, you know, it's really pretty involved. And I mean, right, what we're writing about is, I mean, some of these are very involved, and it gets into, people who are willing to have, let me put it as kindly as possible. You know, young doctors work on their nether regions, I guess would be it, you know, for various things. And I mean, what they, you know, they come in with a story, you know, like one, you know, they're very involved. I mean, one of them was like something that one of the actors said, you know, she was supposed to portray a transsexual who had been raped by three men. And
Wow. Run,
I mean, just, you know, really a variety. I mean, I know that's a little, probably a little too much for
8:30
in the morning, but I mean, they're really specific. And so they give these actors a role to play. I don't know how, if you're a big Seinfeld fan, you probably remember an episode where Kramer and Mickey played a role, you know, they did this kind of thing for a hospital and argued over who got to have jaundice or something like that. It was, but this is not a humorous situation, but it's pretty weird. I mean, it's kind of strange to think. I mean, they pay people to do this.
I've never even thought about
local that. Local actors are doing it. It's local actors getting involved doing it.
We used to, now this is completely different, but we, in Boy Scouts, when you're working on first aid, we'd have, right. I remember one time they had a school bus out on site and acted like it hadn't crashed, but it was sitting there, but they said it's crashed, and mm-hmm. you had to go through and assess what the first aid treatment was for the people going through the bus, and they were kind of actors.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're good actors, but yeah, so you had to just say, you know, is it a broken arm? Is it this or that? Yeah. Does this person need a tourniquet? And they had like ketchup and stuff they squirted.
Is that sort of our school bus crash response?
That's where Boy I was
Scouts.
Trained.
That is, yeah.
I was trained
the Boy Scouts.
I was trained at
Jim
Simone Park.
We've got a pack of Boy Scouts, and Cub Scouts that are going to take over, take care of the bus.
We're pretty good.
Yeah,
pretty good.
Yeah. So so you have real life actors, but also this dummy, as you said, which I think is offensive, by the way.
On the cover that looks a little strange. I agree.
But it can give birth, this doll?
That's what I was told. Gabe Tynes went out there. He did the story. This is all his fault. this was his idea. He thought it was a good idea for a story, and it is a really good story. But the dummy on the cover is like a $20,000 doll that can actually give birth.
That's amazing.
Y'all got to check that out, and then you'll read through the story, the things that Rob didn't say out loud. You'll read those words from Gabe Tynes.
So the
South is one of the few medical schools that does this. So they
really? This isn't standard?
This is not standard. People coming in from all over the place to see it, and they also sell some of this information to other schools and businesses.
I wonder if Auburn has a fake horse that gives birth up there.
Probably
from vet school.
I would imagine.
That'd be interesting. So the big topic of discussion today for us has been what's happening in Montgomery. And with today being the second to final day of general session, we've spent a lot of this hour talking about the gaming bill, a little bit less discussion on the medical marijuana bill, which on Tuesday they debated for a good 10 hours before they ran out of daylight, midnight hit, and they had to go home. Medical marijuana bills.
I don't know if that was really a debate, but
more of a filibuster. Yeah. And this comes after, 23 district attorneys across the state wrote a letter basically saying they don't want medical marijuana legalized, the whole slippery slope argument. And you wrote about that in this week's issue.
Yeah, well, we did. Yeah, we wrote about it. I wrote a column about it, and we also had a hard news story on it. But, you know, these 23 district attorneys basically came in here at the last minute and said, we don't want you to pass this. And then they put out this letter that was basically about, you know, widespread legalization for recreational use, which is not what the bill's about. You know, so, but it apparently has gotten enough attention in the House. You know, the House is this is, I guess, the third year in a row this has passed the Senate, but the House is, it hasn't gotten past the House. And the district attorneys have painted this entire, picture of, widespread weed usage, which actually already exists. But, the concept that they want to get involved in medicine, in deciding what medicines are available, all of a sudden is kind of, to me, a real problem. And, using this kind of false argument that, that this is widespread legalization. It's not. And I mean, you can't legalize, you can't have the legalization that they're discussing without going back before the legislature doing it.
I think that's one of the keys, Rob. I was talking about this yesterday as well, that now, I stay in this middle ground where I'm, on nobody's side, but, if you say there's not a stepping stone from medical to recreational, well, there's a lot of states have showed that that is their stepping stone, right? They have made that step. But it's not like it just does it on its own. That means the legislature goes back and does the additional for recreational marijuana. If you're looking at the legislature we have in Montgomery right now and think that there's any time real soon they're going to run through a recreational marijuana bill, you're wrong.
Right. And that's the thing is that people say, oh, well, look what's happened in those places. Those were the places that are already more prone to legalization to begin with. I mean, those states that legalized medical marijuana first are the states that we're looking, where the people there are most likely to do that. They're not going to do that here in Alabama, first of all. But the reality of it is that, there are people who need medication. And we wrote about this before about, there are people who left the state to go and be able to have medical access to medical marijuana for epileptic seizures, things like that. And, so there are actual people who are getting hurt and actual people who need access to this.
Yep.
And I'm sure that, why don't we just go out and get pot and smoke then anyway? Everybody else is doing it. Well, this is medicine administered by a physician.
Yeah, and there's people who are not going to, I know it's a novel concept, right. But there's still people who are not going to break the law.
Right.
There
are people who might have a child who's having 100 seizures a day, and they don't really have time or energy to go out and try to find weed.
Mm-hmm.
And, it would be a lot better if their doctor had access. But, if we're going to argue the slippery slope thing, it goes both ways. So then you're going to say, well, okay, then are we going to get into the attorney general's discussing every medication that comes through and deciding whether that has a slippery slope? Let's eat Xanax then all day.
Yeah.
And see where that goes. That's better. I think they're out of their, they're not in their lane, in my opinion, on this thing. They're out of it. And I think that really we're going to be once again, one of the last, or if not the last state to do this. And there are people who aren't going to have the ability to get medications that they need. It's not, there's not going to be pot dispensers on every corner.
The best argument I've seen is that the people that really want to smoke weed recreationally are already able to do that. And
exactly.
That, like you guys just said, those that follow the law are following the law. And so many times those are the people that need it. I just wonder, California legalized medical marijuana 1996. I just looked it up.
Yeah.
First state to do that. It's still illegal, according to the federal government, right? Even medical marijuana?
Yeah, and that's one of the problems Attorney General of the state will argue that we shouldn't pass something that's in violation of federal law. And I think that's interesting. That's why I told folks who didn't.
Isn't he a big states' rights guy?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. That's what I thought.
But I pointed this way.
Except when it suits his needs, right?
Well, and I'll ask him about this because he's going to be a guest on today's show, but on the midday show. But I said this back when Jeff Sessions was running DOJ, Attorney General. And I said, people who want to see legalization have their best advocate in Jeff Sessions. People say, hey, what are you talking about? That's crazy talk. I said, no, because I'd like to see if federal enforcement went in on states where recreational is legal, the states would cry foul, and then the legislative branch would have to do something about it. And so right now the legislative branch has its cake and smokes it too, or whatever, right? That is against the law, and they're not doing anything to enforce the violation of the law in the other states. And that's something that puts me, because I want it to, rule of law is important to me. So that part is, but we have a federal government showing that they're not going to do anything about the federal law on marijuana. Mm-hmm. So where do you go from there? I don't know. But I mean, I think there's fair arguments to be made on both, but the number one concern would be the medical side of this and those people. And sure, are people going to get weed illegally? Sure they are. But I mean, I'm worried about some child,
yeah,
some
that's
person,
what I'm saying.
Whatever.
They argue in their letter is that, you know, hey, UAB is working on this breakthrough for people with seizures, and you know, it's that won't use THC. Okay, that sounds great, but you know, if you're somebody who is suffering right now, waiting for something, a breakthrough to make it through and come through, you know, it's like the child we wrote about that last fall. You know, that child couldn't get the experimental stuff that UAB was working on because she was only on 3 anticonvulsant medications, not 4.
Wow.
So, you know, it's, people don't really understand that kind of stuff, I guess. If you don't have any issues like that, or you have never seen people with issues like that, maybe you don't understand it. But and it sounds like, well, just let them wait. They'll be all right, you know. But there's real people, and we're doing it for, again, this argument is a fallacy to begin with. It's a false argument. It's, you know, the argument is, hey, it's going to make weed illegal everywhere, and that's not what it's about. And so they're arguing something that's not true.
And I don't have the bill in front of me, but I know I've had Melson on several times. If I remember correctly, too, it's not coming in the form of
no smoking or vaping.
No smoking, no. Vaping. It's not. So it's not in any of those forms. Nobody's going to get a prescription for some joints or something like that. That's not how this works.
I mean, that's the thing as well. It's again, you know, I know a jillion people around here who smoke pot constantly, and especially with the advent of vape pens, people are walking around in public smoking pot all the time.
Yeah, but that doesn't make it okay. Okay,
I'm not saying it makes it okay, but my point being is that they're not waiting in line for medical marijuana.
Correct.
Those people aren't going to sit around and go, "Oh man, I can't wait to get some medical marijuana and have some THC."
Have a suppository.
Oil.
You know, going to come in a suppository form.
You know, that's not what this is about. And again, it is just, you know, we always get sidetracked in this debate of legalization and for recreational use, and it's not about that. And they're arguing something that is not in the bill.
We'll see what the legislature decides or doesn't decide today. Rob, can you hang out with us? I want to talk about the latest from the Bayou LaBattery Housing Authority story that Lanyap's been on top of since the very beginning. 10 till 9, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings. Dalton Orwig, Sean Sullivan in the studio today, and we'll be right back. '54, wrapping up Mobile Mornings on FM Talk 106.5. And new issue of Lanyap on stands now. We're talking with Rob Hulbert with Lanyap. LanyapMobile.com. And Rob, how can people sign up online and get the newest from Lanyap whenever an article is published?
Well, you can go to LanyapMobile.com, and that will get you, if you're not a subscriber, you can sign up then, and that will get you all of our breaking news. And trust me, if you're not online, you're missing a lot of news. You're missing a lot of sports stuff. You're missing a lot of breaking news. You're missing our podcast. You're missing a number of things. So, and then also it gets you signed up for Sunday Brunch, my Sunday newsletter that I slave over the rest of the week. So there's a lot of stuff there.
I tell you, one of the stories you and I have talked about this at length here in detail, and people can go read the story and go search through LanyapMobile.com to look at the backstory. But an update here on what was going on in the Bayou. Former Bayou housing employees fighting for $4.1 million retirement package. This is Gabe's story. What's the latest?
All right, I'm going to try to give you the Cliff's Notes version here. Basically, you know, down at Bayou LaBattery, the housing board, there was a contract extension to Virginia Huddleston and her husband, who were running a 99-unit housing development down there. And when that contract extension included a $4.1 million lump sum retirement fund for them, and they were going to sell the only piece of property that they managed in order to pay them $4 million. Well, when all this came out, they all quit. There's an investigation by the Sheriff's Department. But now Virginia is coming back saying, hey, that contract was signed. We want our $4 million. So it's double down, man. That's what it is. It's doubling down.
So, doubling down on retirement when people are asking, they're going to get prosecuted. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
that's the thing. They're under investigation at this point, but there's no charges that have been filed. So at this point, they're saying, "Hey, we want our $4 million."
And that was signed off on by this board, right?
Correct. And the board all resigned.
And
the board resigned, and the director resigned, and her husband resigned.
But the board, if I remember the conversations past, correct me here, is independent of the city government of Bala Batri.
Correct.
So yes. where does it, let's say this, how somehow they did say, okay, they're going to get the four. Who's liable for it? Who pays for it?
I mean, I don't know. I guess they would have to. First of all, the only way they would get that money is they have to sell Safe Harbor. Which, I mean, there's a whole other story about how that was an $18 million federal grant to build that to begin mm-hmm. with, and now it is. Now we're talking about it dwindling down to turning into a $4 million, retirement fund for two people.
And that in running something like that, that you have a retirement package that's that size, that I'm bumfuddled by this conversation that the board would say that was equitable in comparison to the job. I mean,
well, they were paying the two of them well over $200,000. They had about 3 months of vacation a year. They paid for her school. They paid for, I mean, there's two trucks that apparently are still missing that nobody can find. There's a bunch of stuff going on with this that we still don't have answers to. But it's an amazing amount. People don't get $4 million retirement accounts for running a 99-unit apartment. It's not typical.
This story has been fascinating from the get-go, and you could put a screenplay together from all the articles written on this in Lanyap alone.
It's pretty fascinating.
Very fascinating. Rob, we appreciate your time with us this morning. One more time, Issues on Stands Now. Where can people pick up the latest Lanyap?
You can pick them up at our Purple Box. You can see it online and also get up there and vote. I mean, we've already got 650,000 votes in the last week. It's going crazy already. Get out there and join the insanity.
Awesome.
VoteNappies.com.
That's it. Thank you, Rob.
Bye.
Coming up, Jeff Porcio, Todd Stacy joins to talk Montgomery. Also, former state senator Rusty Glover, Josh Moon from the Alabama Political Reporter, and former governor Don Siegelman. Stay tuned.